armchair.
There's something, I'll say there's something kind of about a kid that's never played baseball.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and flat out deceived.
Why did you get so drunk?
You got drunk. I'm just really exhausted.
What's in that cup?
Rum and Cokes.
Do you have any idea how important this is?
You
have any idea?
Really,
this is what you're doing?
Chief, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night. Try to take over the world.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Armchair.
YouTube Live.
Radio Station.
The radio station you can call your own. What listeners like about our station?
I like everything. It's always on my radio.
We never stop the music, except for now, when I talk.
Dandy day for a ball game. And a nice crowd out here to see the Yankees making their last appearance at Maven Field for 1934. We hope before the ball game gets over that Babe Ruth gets in it. I'd like to see Babe take one more swing this season. But his leg is pretty sore. He takes a bit of batting practice, but not very much. Manager Cochran's Charlie Horse is better, but still not cured. That's why he's out of today's game. The wind is blowing toward left center field. Larrapin Lou Gehrig is the batter with the bases loaded and one out. The crowd is getting rather tense. The score is 2-1 in favor of the Yankees. This is the third inning. Marbury is raising quite a bit of dust out there as he kicks the ground around to get better footing. He's been off in his pitching. His control has been bad. Here's the pitch to Gehrig, and it's high outside. Ball one. A high, hard one. Gets the sign from Hayworth. Starts the motion. Here's the pitch. A bounder over second base for a hit into center field. Volca scoring, followed by Rolf. Selkirk reaching third. Makes the score 4-1 in favor of the Yanks. That seems to be all for Marbury. Time is called, and Hamlin comes in from the bullpen to relieve Marbury, who has allowed 4 runs and 6 hits in 2 1/3 innings.
Good afternoon to you, baseball fans. So, my name is Mac McGee. If you have not followed Braves Country Radio before, just going to give you a real quick outline of what we're going to do today. This is for the baseball fan. So, long story short, there was a baseball show that went on for well over 40 years. In fact, I think 47 years, if I am being accurate, and it was called the Annual Salute to Baseball. The gentleman has since stepped away. His name was Jonathan Schwartz. He no longer does the Salute to Baseball, and it's a lot of he said, she said stuff that led to him walking away. But then, of course, age. I mean, he'd been in radio for well over 50 years, but he loved baseball. So you got to realize this began, I think, 1971. Was the original year, but he loved baseball so that he just was not willing to focus on the Super Bowl every Super Sunday. And I talked about doing this last year, and so we decided we're going to go ahead and give it a try. This will be an annual tradition. Won't take up much of your time on Super Bowl Sunday. We know the Super Bowl has become a much bigger thing than when he first started. Now, the difference between what he did and what we are going to do, he just played a lot of songs based on the world of baseball. We are going to talk about the game of baseball, the love of it, the history of it, and the clip you just heard was one of the oldest recordings of a full baseball game. It was 1934. It was the Tigers and Yankees. And what you're hearing is Babe Ruth being out of that game because of an injury. And that was the great Lou Gehrig getting a base hit. Now, why that game is important is because the New York Yankees finished 7 games behind those Detroit Tigers. The Tigers would go on to the World Series and they would lose in seven games to the famous Gas House Gang of the St. Louis Cardinals. But it's a neat clip to listen to. You see the difference. Now, what you don't realize is that thing was edited. We had to chop it up because there are long gaps in the broadcast that you would literally fall asleep in nowadays world. Nowadays, there was no way you would sit through just the awful dead air. But realize, radio was new. It had only been around for about a little over a decade. They'd only been doing baseball games for a little less than that. And they weren't consistently broadcasted baseball games, radio baseball games, until about that time. And I thought today it would be fun to talk about the beginning of baseball on the radio. Each year we're going to dive into something else, and we'll do other things each year, but I do want to do this one first. Now, why are we not doing this with any kind of video, whether you're listening to it on YouTube or you're listening to it on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts on Braves Country Radio? We're doing this because we want to be legitimate to the times of the original Salute to Baseball, which started in 1971, which obviously there was no simultaneous video. So this show will be a throwback going forward. The first baseball game that was ever broadcasted was the Pittsburgh Pirates versus the Philadelphia Phillies way back on August 5th, 1921. And it was the famous KDKA of Pittsburgh. Pirates won that game against the Phillies 8-5. Harold Arlen was the play-by-play man, basically known in those days as the staff announcer. He would go on to be the world's first full-time salaried announcer in broadcast radio. He worked as an engineer and later a foreman for Westinghouse. He was hired by KDKA as a part-time announcer in 1920, and by the mid-1920s, he was on salary. He also read over the air the returns of the 1920 presidential election. That was a first. Warren Gene Harding over James Cox. And just a side note on that, before we get back into the baseball, Arlen would continue to do tennis on radio. I mean, I can't imagine listening to that. I mean, that I can tell you right now, when you listen to the early days of the radio, not only is it there a lot of crackling, but they didn't really know what they were doing. And what I mean by that is it was just kind of a go out there and wing it. Now, obviously, as the years go on, you end up getting very talented broadcasters who have an idea going in what they're doing, the Vin Scullies, the Red Barbers, and they're able to paint the picture. But the original pioneers, they were just kind of told, hey, go out there and see what you can do. 1921 on August 6th, the day after the baseball broadcast, Arlen announced the first radio broadcast of a tennis match over KDKA as well. It was a quarterfinals match in which Australia was playing Great Britain at the Allegheny County Club in Pittsburgh for the Davis Cup. It's a lot of history here, right? Australia beat Great Britain, by the way, 3-2, and went all the way to the finals to lose to Japan 4-1. But that made history as well. On October 8th of that year, Arlen, from the same box seat at Forbes Field that he used to do the Pirates and Phillies broadcast, provided play-by-play of the backyard brawl. If you listen to our Once Upon a Pastime series, you know what that is. It was a college football game between the University of Pittsburgh Panthers and West Virginia Mountaineers. Pittsburgh won that game 21-13. But the idea is Harold Arlen is an absolute legend in the radio business. Now, you can argue back and forth on whether or not he's one of your top ones. It doesn't matter. He was a pioneer and really paved the way and showed a willingness to go out there and broadcast anything he could do to bring it to you live. But back to the game of baseball on radio, KDKA and WJZ of Newark, New Jersey, broadcast the first World Series on radio between the New York Giants and the New York Yankees with Grantland Rice, if you're familiar with him. And for you Murfreesboro, Tennessee folks, if you don't know who Grantland Rice is, you need to go and investigate him. But the point is, he's from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. He was born in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and became one of the great writers in the history of sports writing, graduating from Vanderbilt. But Grantland Rice and Tommy Cowan called the games for KDKA and WJZ, but the broadcasters were not actually at the game. But you got to be sitting there going, well, how the hell did they do that? Nowadays, I do it all the time, watching a stream of a baseball or a football game and bringing you what I see in real time. But you got to realize back then, not only was there no television, there was no internet. So what did we do? Well, they would wait for the news, the information, from a telegraph wire. And as that telegraph wire would come in, and they would be very generic information. And this went on for quite some time on a lot of the radio broadcasts throughout the country. In fact, it's not until about 20 years later that most of your games are being called play-by-play physically at the game. Now your bigger cities, New York, Boston, you know, we're talking about the Red Sox, the Braves, the Yankees, the Giants, the Dodgers. They had all started to implement broadcast booths, but your smaller market teams, a lot of them, first of all, they weren't traveling with the team for road games, and that was pretty common across the board, but a lot of them would sit in the radio station, wait for the telegraph to come across the wire, and they're not getting a complete description. What they're getting is either A, some of them were so basic they would just tell you it was an out. As they got better, they would tell you that it was a ground out or a fly out, etc., maybe even a strikeout. And then as it got more and more up to date, they actually started getting the balls and strikes called very regularly. And when that happened, they were really being very liberal on what they saw, because they weren't seeing anything. So it would be things like, just to give an example, as opposed to actually seeing it happen, you would see it come across the telewire and it'd say ball. Well, I'll just give you an example. Let's say it's today's baseball, and let's say it's Spencer Strider pitching against the Philadelphia Phillies, and I get ball. It would be up to me to say something to the effect of, here's the wind up, the pitch, high heat inside, almost gets him. It's 1-0. But there's no telling what the hell happened. He could have thrown a slider in the dirt. The ball could have been high and away with no runners on base. It could have bounced off the catcher's glove. So you can imagine these guys really had to become very, very creative. So when they finally got to the point where they could see the game, you can imagine that's why some of these guys were just elite. When it finally came around, they were actually able to see the game. It's like giving a blind man vision instantly. The job itself is going to become a lot easier, but the expectations are going to be higher. So back to what was going on in the world of baseball with these radio broadcasts. For the 1923 World Series, Grantland Rice was joined on Westinghouse for the first time by Graham McNamee. Now, McNamee was given the Ford Frick Award, which is the Baseball Hall of Fame's, once a year they give a broadcaster the award. And he was given the award back in 2016. It was long overdue. Now, here's the thing about McNamee. During the 1923 World Series, Grantland Rice was the main broadcaster, but during the fourth inning of Game 3, he turned the microphone over to McNamee. This was the start of his career, essentially, and McNamee becomes the first color commentator in the history of radio baseball. Before that, all you ever had was just the one guy giving play-by-play, very much like Vin Scully is known for. And still pretty much my favorite version. It's why I do most of my games solo. I know you can argue that back and forth, and some people have their different reasonings for liking different things, but I'm a traditionalist, and that's why I do prefer it. There are times where we do bring guys in, but there's a rhythm that you can get into when you're by yourself on a broadcast that really takes a while to work for a color commentator and play-by-play guy. If we ever added a color commentator to Braves Country Radio, it would have to be someone that made a commitment to be on every broadcast, because getting that rhythm, I guess the best way I can explain it for someone who's never tried to do it, you can't just put a great guitarist and throw him into a band the night of a show. He's got to go in, work with the others, and get a rhythm. So it's much like that. Now, the thing about McNamee, though he's in the Hall of Fame, he's credited as the first to ever be the color commentator. He was really criticized at the beginning for his lack of expertise, mainly because McNamee, if you go into his background, He was an attorney. He was a legal advisor for President Grover Cleveland's cabinet. And in 1922, while serving jury duty in New York City, he visited the studios of the radio stations, mainly WEAF, and went to audition as a singer in the middle of one of the, on his way to the courthouse one day, just decided he was going to audition as a singer. Someone noticed his voice and asked him to speak through the microphone. He was given an audition at that point, hired on the spot as a staff announcer. So he just gave up the law and became a staff announcer. So realize, he's calling the World Series a year after getting this job, and he did not grow up around following sports. He was in there trying to make it in music. But he started going to all the big events and volunteering to be the guy who would basically be the color commentator. He did the World Series. He did Rose Bowl games, championship boxing, Indianapolis 500. But back in the early 1920s, baseball was king. As big as the Rose Bowl was and as huge as boxing was, and it was huge. And the Indianapolis 500 was much bigger than it is today as far as in the national psyche. You still have your big auto racing fans, don't get me wrong, but back then it was a huge deal. Even as big as those were, being the World Series announcer was the cream of the crop. But if you listen to a lot of the folks that were talking about why they didn't love his style, the reporters would be at the games to write their stories, and their descriptions of McNamee's broadcasts came in as boring, a lot of dead air, and I went back and listened to a couple, and I mean, they were right. Mostly given in the past tense after a play was completed, and this is as he was sitting at the game, so that's why he got a lot of flack. But Grantland Rice stepped in and kind of helped him tool along and teach him the ins and outs of the game of baseball. And he was far from a baseball expert, but he had the enthusiasm and wanted to learn. And what he was known for, as after he got his feet under him, was that he started doing what a lot of folks were doing in radio back then, making artificial sounds and whatnot. And so he was bringing an excitement to the game. You couldn't get away with that in today's broadcasts, but it was unique back then. Now, he would go on and work political conventions and do a lot of other things, but baseball is what really got him to the forefront. By 1924, 1925-ish, there were baseball broadcasts just sporadically popping up in all cities. Now, one of the reasons why they didn't have much of an actual hard schedule, because a lot of times they didn't know what would be available to them over the line, on the telewire, etc. But this starts popping up. You start getting a lot of broadcasts on WGN, the AM station in Chicago. They started doing Cubs games, White Sox games. Remember, back then, you weren't paying for the rights. You were just showing up and doing the games. So the great part of this was the White Sox and Cubs, WGN would just go to whoever was in town. And they started broadcasting a lot of games. Same thing in Boston, WBZ. B as in boy, Z as in zoo. They start broadcasting in 1925, opening day for your Boston Braves. And they were playing against the New York Giants, a huge game. And that really made the headlines in the newspapers back in 1925. That date in 1925, April 1925, is the first time either the Red Sox or the Braves, the two Boston teams, had ever been broadcasted on air. Throughout the rest of the 1925 season, Boston station WNAC broadcasted back and forth Braves and Red Sox home games all throughout 1925 into 1926. Predominantly in 1925, it was Braves games, but then they started adding the Red Sox. As this is going on, the National Broadcasting Company, NBC, and Columbia Broadcasting System, CBS, by October 1927, these two conglomerates would create coast-to-coast networks to broadcast the World Series for the first time. Graham McNamee was chosen to announce the games for NBC, and Major Andrew White was the announcer for CBS. In that first year, the baseball commissioner, I know you know this name, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, gave permission for both networks to air the games. Like I said, back then, they were just trying to popularize the radio game. In the very early stages of it, there were owners of different teams that thought broadcasting the game on radio was foolish because you're giving something for free over the air as opposed to making them come to the park. Because at that time, most of the people that were listening were living in the city. Well, the bigger cities proved that to be wrong, because what you really were doing is you were popularizing the game. You were letting a kid, because of AM frequencies, and a lot of people didn't understand at the time, but AM frequencies bounce all over the place, go for long distances. And so that's why, like in Middle Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, talked to many people over the years when I lived there, that they grew up listening to the St. Louis Cardinals on radio because they could listen to the cadence coming over the airwaves at night on their AM station. So it built the Cardinals brand, and that was going on all over the country. And as you can imagine, in the cold nights, early season and late season, in Boston and New York and Chicago and all the little towns all around that couldn't get to the game, well, they would turn on the radio, and at the same time, they were following these teams through the newspaper. And it was a popular sport to follow, so because most people had seen this sport live, growing up playing it in their lifetime. So they could imagine exactly what the broadcaster was painting. It was a little more challenging for the other sports. There were people that grew up in these small towns that never saw a football game, that never witnessed a live basketball game, didn't grow up playing it in their school. But everybody played baseball, so that's why the popularity stuck. You know, that same theory came into television years later. Well into the late 1970s, college football believed that they should not be putting a lot of games on TV because they wanted people to come to the stadium. Well, now we know their bread is actually buttered with the television money. But back in those days, you didn't have these huge contracts, and they were trying to get every dime they could out of the turnstiles. And that's why I just missed it. But in the 1970s, I was a young kid, so I barely would have remembered this. But you were only getting 1 to 2 ball games on a week. So I don't think I understood the excitement when I was coming of age. And I really started watching college football very late 70s, early 1980s. But for argument's sake, we'll put it around 1981, 1982 when I really started understanding what was on TV. And I'd say I didn't start really watching it in full until around 84. Is where I'll put it, maybe even 83, but well, you know, mid-80s. And I don't think I understood at the time the excitement from my dad and my grandfather of how many games were going to be on this weekend. They would talk about it all the time. So back to the baseball side of it, you look at it now, if you have the MLB package, you can watch the MLB any night. There's a game on, multiple games on. And if you have multiple devices, you can watch several games. It's what I do. When I'm doing the Braves broadcast, I usually have one, maybe even two other games going at the same time that I can peer over and look and keep an eye on the score of, it's usually someone who's following us in the division, but whoever, and I can watch as much as I want to watch, right? Well, that wasn't the case. And obviously back when we're talking about the beginning of Major League Baseball being on radio, you had one station in your town that was broadcasting a game. You didn't have a national broadcast, you know, this wasn't SiriusXM. You didn't have the national broadcast. And oh, by the way, I can also go over and listen to the Detroit Tigers or the Seattle Mariners. It's wherever you lived. By the 1930s, the two-team cities of Boston, Philadelphia, remember St. Louis had the Browns, talked about Chicago, had reached an agreement not to broadcast in away games. So in other words, if the Boston Braves were at home, listeners could hear that game on the radio, but could not listen to the Boston Red Sox away game. The owner's argument was they won't come to the park if you give the game away. We just talked about that. I didn't really understand that philosophy, because you would think that the away game would be what you'd want to hear because you couldn't go to the park. But I really think that was just a cost-cutting move. They didn't want to pay all these broadcasters bouncing all over the place. And people were going to the games. What really became popularized in the 1930s into the 40s is people were going to the games and carrying their little handheld transistor radios and listening to the game at the game they were at. So it became very important to be the station that was broadcasting the Boston Braves versus the New York Giants, because the Braves were right in front of you and you were listening. What you were really listening for if you were in the park is the information that you couldn't see. Because a lot of these older parks had terrible seating situations. So, you know, bad views, et cetera, et cetera. and they couldn't see in real time, not only if a guy was safe or not, but if, you know, a ball, a strike, all that kind of stuff. Now, by 1935, the commissioner, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, orchestrated a radio deal to cover the World Series. All three networks were involved, and baseball made over $400,000, which was huge at that time. At that time, the Gillette, the razor manufacturer, started realizing the power of advertising in the sport, and they offered Red Barber a substantial amount to walk out on his Dodger contract and join Gillette on a new Yankees-Giants network. Barber turned it down, but in 1946, the company was rich enough to sign a 10-year, $14 million deal. Think about that. 10-year, $14 million deal back in the 1940s for exclusive radio sponsorship of the World Series and the All-Star Games. During this time period, in the 30s and 40s, many of your baseball teams started broadcasting all of the games by the 1940s. The last holdouts were the Giants, Dodgers, Yankees, because they combined to block radio broadcasts of their own games, but that ended in 1938. Now, what you would consider the golden age of radio, we're going to touch on that. We will be back in a flash here on Braves Country Radio. Hey, Braves Country, I'm Mac McGee. Join us for Pitch by Pitch, Play by Play, the classic call of Braves Country Baseball. We're bringing you Atlanta Braves baseball all year long. Jump into our pregame show, Braves Country Today, just before first pitch. Stick around for the postgame show, Braves Country Tonight, where we will open up the phone lines and react to your calls or your comments all year long. That's Braves Country Radio, Pitch by Pitch, Play by Play, your home for the classic call of Braves Country Baseball.
Not taking any chances. Watson without too big of a lead in second, but he'll be running like the wind if Thompson hits one. Back to throws. There's a ball!
Brand new for the 2024 Braves Country Radio broadcast season, along with Pitch by Pitch, Play by Play, the classic call of Braves Country Baseball, we will bring you a live pregame show and postgame show, phone lines wide open for you to call, react, or ask your questions along with the chat. That's Braves Country Today pregame, Braves Country Tonight postgame. We'll see you in 2024.
Hi, folks. Join us now for another Brooklyn ball game here at Ebbets Field. Yes, sir. Right back to bring you the Dodgers again as they take on the Boston Braves in the first of a three-game series here at Ebbets Field, Brooklyn, USA. This is the old redhead, Red Barber, saying a high hello to you, and Connie Desmond will be along here in a few minutes between the two of us while we'll send you the play-by-play.
A salute to baseball. Yeah, that was the old redhead, Red Barber, and an absolute icon in radio baseball. Forget that, an absolute icon in America, and especially in sports America. You can't talk about television, radio, sportscasting without mentioning Red Barber. He is the one that groomed and brought along the great Vin Scully. Barber was a little older than Vin, and by the time television really got kicking, Barber was really had not a whole lot of interest in television, was much more of a radio guy. Red was born in Columbus, Mississippi in 1908 and lived until 1992 at the age of 84. He graduated from the University of Florida, but spent his last years in Tallahassee. Now, you got to remember, when Red Barber was of age to go to college, Florida State was a women's college. And he was brought along by some of the greats, some of the great names of college football radio, And one of the main ones is the great John Ward of the University of Tennessee. John Ward of Tennessee cut his teeth down in Georgia. So they all, and it really is, I don't know if you want to say it's funny, but it's interesting to me because you've heard all in all your entire adulthood, I'm sure, man, you've got an accent. You from the South? And they try to portray it as it is a bad thing, a thing that's going to hold you back. But your truly great broadcasters in the history of sportscasting, so many of them have come from the South or the Midwest and have had the accents that you hear about. You look at Mel Allen. He was from Birmingham, Alabama. Went to the University of Alabama. Harry Carey was from St. Louis, Missouri. I know that's not quite the South, but it is the Southern, it is the Midwest and the Southern part of it. Russ Hodges, who was the famous Giants win the pennant, which you heard at the beginning of the broadcast, from Dayton, Tennessee, and went to school at the University of Kentucky. So you start seeing a pattern here. The great Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Detroit Tigers, he's from Washington, Georgia. Vin Scully is the outlier. He was from the Bronx in New York. Grew up listening to these guys as he was coming along and decided that's what I wanted to do. Now, of course, he spent most of his career out in Los Angeles, but from New York. And really, because he was around those guys, if you listen to the Vin Scully broadcast, he has much more of a Midwest sound and a bit of a Southern cadence. But those are the truly great names of what they call the golden age of radio. If you were putting together a Mount Rushmore, first of all, it'd be very difficult to put four on there. Because all the ones that I just named would have to go on there of baseball. For me, Red Barber, Vin Scully, and it's going to be really hard for me to leave out all the Braves broadcasters. So I would probably have to, just because I've got to put a radio guy there, I'm probably going to go towards like a Pete Van Wieren, and then how do you not put Harry Carey? But it's such a difficult. You talk about how long this great game has been going on and the great broadcasters that have come through. And what we do on Braves Country Radio will never touch what they do. But we're trying to hold up a tradition, something that I saw dying on a vine. And it's one of the reasons why I've gotten motivated to try to bring it back via YouTube is because back in the day you could turn on a radio anywhere and you could pick up a local AM station from miles and miles away and listen to your game. And even as the age of television came in, so many people would mute their television and watch the baseball game, watch the football game. My dad did it with college football for as long as I can remember. It wasn't until we moved away from the Florida area and ended up in Nashville, and he couldn't hear it. He loved listening to Gene Deckerhoff. Ironically, he went to high school with Deckerhoff, but he loved listening to it. And so that's a little bit of what we're trying to bring back. What's great about the way it is on YouTube is you can pause your streaming device or pause YouTube, whichever one's in front, and you can sync them up. You couldn't really do that back in the day. Typically what happened is that you got either your television or your radio cast, and normally you were getting your video first and then you were getting the audio. But you were fine with that because what you were hearing was explaining to what you just saw or coloring the picture of what you just saw. The golden age of radio was really in that 1950s wheelhouse. You start talking about why it was so popular. Something that you have to keep in mind is in the 1950s, the New York baseball teams were always in the World Series. 1940s into the 1950s. So not only did you have the elite broadcasters of that era all in New York City, but the teams, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Giants, they were all making it to the World Series. And it really made for just a great era of baseball radio. And then even if you didn't have the New York team if one of the Boston teams are in the area of New York, you could pick the games up. I lived in on Eastern Long Island for a summer, and I could pick up Red Sox radio over the pond. We'd listen to it all the time coming home. I was a chef up there, and the short of it is I would get off work, and I would just turn on the radio. I found the AM station that came out of Boston, and I'd be listening to the Red Sox on my way home. It was a short drive, but to me, it was nirvana to be able to turn on radio, baseball radio, in a place where baseball is beloved. I can't do it justice, Braves country, and the Braves will always be my team, but I can't do it justice what it is to be in that area, even for the short time that I was there, during a baseball season, because I was there for the majority of that baseball season, and the obsession that everybody, not just the pockets, because we all know how it is in the South, the Braves fans that are out there, we are diehard for the most part, and we love every minute of it, and we leave it and breathe with the Braves, but there's so many folks here in the Mid-South or in the Southeast in general that only pick up on baseball come October, because they either grew up on NASCAR or they just don't have an interest, and they're much more obsessed with the college football Saturday, the NFL Sunday. But when we talk about the golden age of radio, and I'm just going to go back and hit it here. Now, it's a little difficult because of World War II breaking up these teams, but just listen to this. We're going to start with 1936. The New York Yankees and New York Giants faced in the World Series both of those years, both 1936 and 1937. Yankees winning them both. In 1938, the Yankees beat the Cubs. In 1939, the Yankees beat the Reds. They swept those last two series, and of those 4 years of back-to-back-to-back-to-back World Series championships, Joe McCarthy's Yankees went 12-3 in the World Series. That era, you have to realize, this is the tail end of Babe Ruth leaving the Yankees and retiring, Lou Gehrig getting ALS and retiring, and the emergence of Joe DiMaggio. All this is happening at once. In 1941, a New York team is back. The Yankees beat the Dodgers 4-1. In 1942, the St. Louis Cardinals beat the Yankees 4-1, but there's a New York team in the World Series. In 1943, the Yankees 4-1 over the Cardinals. Then in 1944, and that was a screwy year because a lot of guys were missing because of the war, you actually had a St. Louis series, the Browns and Cardinals. Cardinals beating out the Browns 4-2. Then the New York teams are back in it by 1947, but you did have the Red Sox and Cardinals square off in 1946. But in 1947, Yankees over the Dodgers. 48, Boston is in there, so you're still being able to listen to all this radio in the New York area, and for the Boston area, for that matter. 49, 50, 51, 52, 53. You have the New York Yankees win 5 consecutive World Series with Casey Stengel. And in those years, he beat the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Dodgers. In 1954, the New York Giants are in the World Series facing the Cleveland Indians. The Yankee streak is broken. And then in 1955, dem bums, in 7 games, knock off the New York Yankees and Casey Stengel 4-3. In 1956, Yankees rematch with the Dodgers, and this time they win it in 7 games. And then in 57, you've got the Yankees, and they're playing the Milwaukee Braves. But remember, Milwaukee had just moved from Boston, so you got a lot of Boston fans in the area pulling for them. And the Yankees lose to the great 57 Milwaukee Braves in 7. Then the Yankees are facing those same Milwaukee Braves. They get the best out of the Braves, winning 4-7 in the 58 series. By this time, the Dodgers have moved west. By 59, they are in the World Series, but it's not the same. You still got folks wanting to listen, but it's not the same. The Yankees would make it back to the World Series, but lose in 1960. Yankees would win in 61 and 62, but that kind of ends the golden age of baseball radio in the New York area, because you got the Giants out west, you got the Dodgers out west, and the Yankees go through a drought where they do not reach the World Series. They did lose to the Dodgers in 63 and the Cardinals in 64, but they go through a drought of not winning a World Series, is what I guess I should say, until 1977, which, look, that's nothing for most franchises, but for the New York Yankees to go, what is that, 15 years without winning a World Series? That was a drought, my friends. They made it to the World Series in 1976, losing to the Big Red Machine. But by the time you hit the 1970s, not only is the great Jonathan Schwartz doing a salute to baseball on local radio in the New York area, but television is now becoming king. You no longer are just wanting to listen to the game on radio and maybe go to the game. You're now, millions of people are consuming the World Series. There really was an explosion in the 1975 series. It really was the turning point, because those games, for the first time, all of them were broadcasted at night. And that was the infamous Reds winning the seven-game series against the Red Sox. But remember, Game 6 is one of the most famous games in all of sports, where the Yankees hits that walk-off, and he's motioning down the line as the ball goes over the Green Monster. That really ends radio as we know it, because it no longer is the preferred choice. Because even in the 60s and 70s, if you go back and watch those games, you can understand why a lot of people were still preferring to listen to the game on radio. There were a couple of reasons. A, the television broadcaster didn't tend to be the best, and we still have that to this day. They're a little more polished these days, but the television broadcaster does not paint the picture. They're told not to. They're told to let the game breathe. But the more important thing back in those days, no matter what sport you're referring to, but baseball, I think, is up there as far as the big difference between today and yesteryear. The broadcast quality on the film, of course, this is long before HD, but it was awful. It was usually grainy, blurry. You were hoping for a clear day that day so that your rabbit ears could get a good signal. But even with the good signal, you're talking about a very, almost like 2D type of feel to it. Go back and watch those old World Series or old playoff games. You'd be amazed that people were watching these sports, football and baseball. But what you will notice more than anything back then is that, first of all, when they first began the baseball broadcast, they typically used two cameras. There was one high, as Red Barber would call it, the catbird seat, above home plate. And there was one right down the first baseline. So the one above home plate was positioned where you could see the entire field, including home plate, so you could see the overall view. And then the other camera that was positioned, usually either the first or third baseline, but usually the first baseline, that was literally just there to try to catch the force outs at first. And so it really was a brutal broadcast until they get into about the late 1960s, early 1970s. We started getting several different angles. What was different about that, and this is the reason why football became king during the 60s, is because you could use that one predominant television angle and follow a football game perfectly. It was kind of designed to be broadcasted on television. Baseball has never really been designed to be consumed on television from its infancy. You had to be there. And if you can't be there, the second best thing is listening to it on radio. I hope y'all enjoyed this. We are going to be doing these on the Super Bowl Sunday going forward, come hell or high water. Braves Country Radio's salute to baseball. We're going to just try to do the best we can to try to keep the legend of Jonathan Schwartz alive, who loved the game of baseball. We're trying to do it more on the historical side, because I do believe it is the greatest game that's ever been invented. And I hope you take this game from the historical side of our great nation, along with the fact that it is a part of Americana. It's a part of our culture. And it bled into and gave birth to the love affair that most Americans have for some sport, including the Super Bowl. Enjoy the Super Bowl. If it's not your cup of tea, look on the bright side. pitchers and catchers report this week. Y'all have a great Super Sunday. Keep baseball alive in your hearts and in your imaginations. We're going to leave you today with Line Up for Braves Country, a poem we put together this year. Line Up for Braves Country by DM McGee, 2024. A is for Aaron, the Hammer and Hank, the real home run king, take that to the bank. B is for Bobby, Cox never cowered, he'd give Blue quite an earful on his way to the showers. C is for Chipper, don't call him Larry, he would show up in Shea, the Mets he would bury. D is for David, justice he'd bring, a game six solo brought Atlanta their ring. E is for Eddie Matthews, 512 bombs away, lit skies from Boston to Milwaukee to the A. F is for Fred, McGriff dog-biting crime, a fire was lit the day he arrived. G is for Glavin, Southpaw whines and kicks, changing speeds east and west, a gem in game six. H is for Harry and his brother George Wright, the father of baseball, Boston pennants in flight. I is for inning, ending double play, Riley to Ozzy to Olsen all day. J is for Jones, Andrew let her fly, and his gloves in center is where singles would die. K is for strikeouts, a plenty from Strider, the quads in the stash, getting swings from that slider. L is for Lopez, Javi to B-Mac, Travis and Smurf, we've been lucky to see that. M is for Mad Dog, he won 355, could swat flies with the changeup and still bust you inside. N is for Necro, he got to the hall by bending and knuckling and floating that ball. O is for Otis, old Nixon could fly, the catch at the wall baffled our eyes. P still for Peterson, we were all rocking pearls, with Eddie and Jorge, we were out of this world. Q is a quandary for why Dale is not in, Murphy MVPs again and again. R is for ranking, the top pitcher's lore, remember Kid Nichols, 107 war. S is for Smoltzy, the big three in the hall, when the game's on the line, you give John the ball. T is for Tyler, Matzik and the gift of 2021, the entire night shift. U is for Chavez, but we say Uncle Jesse, the frames, the release, kept the batters guessing. V is Van Wieren, Skip Carey too, Don, Ernie, Joe, the tales from the booth. W is Warren, Spawn, Johnny Sane, they'd ride him in Boston and then pray for rain. X is Mazzoni, yeah, X marked the spot, Leo rocked next to Bobby and his pitchers stayed hot. Why, it makes us feel young, the game's main appeal, chopping through the battery, there's no better feel. Z is for Zip Boom Bam, Rama Lama Ding Dong, throughout the summer we sing that song. From AJ to eyeglasses and a hell of a pen, Mad Max, Uncle Charlie, win after win. A cannon from short and RC you later, Acuna Matata, there is no one greater. Though you can't fit them all, when you just A to Z, think of your favorites in the rafters we see. I started with 3, then 10, 25, 47, 31, and of course 29. Let's not forget 21, 41, 35, the great 44, or 755, an old number 6 who led his great teams The pennants were flying. It felt like a dream. From Boston to Milwaukee to Atlanta's TBS, a family, a tradition, Braves Country's the best. Lineup for Braves Country by DM McGee, 2024. Guys and gals, it's time to go. We'll see you on the next show.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thanks for listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks on 99.1 FM WQEE, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Braves Country comes your way weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Please follow, like, and subscribe today. Armchair Quarterback Radio, your first choice for Southern sports.
Something of the 5th of September, something of the 5th of September. She said a lot that I can't remember, something of the 5th. Can I get another cigarette, please? Can I get another cigarette, please? Yeah, I know I live to regret it, just give me another cigarette, please.
You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia.